This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. After 13 months, with enough facts, figures, and summations to fill hundreds of pages, the Northwest Arkansas Council believes it has a guide to the next 10 years for the region. Yesterday, the group unveiled strategies during a more than 90-minute gathering of leaders from the political, nonprofit, education, and business circles of the area.
Today, we're announcing, based on data, qualitative input, quantitative input, 8 key job growth sectors that can transform and drive our economy over the next decade.
Mike Malone, the president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, told the audience that research the council did with Market Street Services, based in Atlanta, indicates there are some traditional economic strengths in Northwest Arkansas, including Walmart and the supplier community that's grown around the retailer. But the report issued yesterday urged the region to diversify its economic base as well. The strategy outlined calls for embracing newer job sectors, like businesses connected with sustainability, university-led technology businesses, arts and tourism, and healthcare. Again, Mike Malone, the president and CEO of Northwest Arkansas Council.
Healthcare is a huge economic driver already. We've got some great jobs. We've got top-notch facilities. But if we can work together, and efforts are already underway to do that, we may become a regional destination for healthcare. We have people traveling to Northwest Arkansas for healthcare. We're starting to see some of that. UAMS has been a catalyst, but the hospitals and healthcare providers are banding together to do that. So we're real fortunate that way.
Economic development is one of the 4 key sectors the council plans on paying attention to over the next year. The other 3, infrastructure, education, and a category called Community Vitality Initiatives, devoted, according to the report, to supporting the work of community and social service providers. Anita Sism, the president of Northwest Arkansas Community Foundation, will chair a committee charged with investigating ways to make communities in the area more diverse, better planned, and healthier. She says there are several issues that will need to be addressed.
Some things that we can look at, like childhood obesity, and the number, childhood obesity in our society right now is quite pervasive, and even in Northwest Arkansas. So I think, it's going to be very important for the committee to look at what our measurable outputs are going to be.
She says other social areas the region can improve include, but are not limited to, improving after-school opportunities for children, encouraging volunteerism, and promoting racial, cultural, and ethnic diversity in Northwest Arkansas. Infrastructure, another area targeted for improvement over the next decade, provides different sorts of tests. Susan Barrett, the chair of the Infrastructure Committee, told the group Tuesday priorities include support of high-impact interstate and highway investments.
We are the only MSA that's connected to just one other metropolitan statistical area dependent on one 4-lane interstate. And our connection is really an interregional connection with Fort Smith. So when you think about what needs to be accomplished in order for us to compete on a local level, on a national level, and on a world level, there's a lot that must be done in the interstate and transportation development area.
Susan Barrett said other priorities include increasing connectivity and cost competitiveness at Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport and improving multimodal transportation in the area. She cited the Underdevelopment Regional Trails Network as an example of the latter. That trail system is an example of something else very important to the area's improvement, according to Barrett, the ability for cities to work together.
Our single biggest stretch for all of these undertakings happens to be our ability and our willingness to see ourselves as a region.
And the borders defining that region appear to be growing. Traditionally, though not exclusively, many have termed Northwest Arkansas as Benton, Washington, Carroll, and Madison counties. Several speakers at the meeting included communities outside that 4-county area in their comments. Tahlequah, Oklahoma, Harrison, and Fort Smith were all mentioned. Sandy Sanders, the mayor of Fort Smith, was at the meeting and agreed with the rising tide lifts all cities attitude.
Well, it's something we need to do. And it's one thing, too, that we're trying to work with in Fort Smith is not just work more closely with Northwest Arkansas people, but also with people in our own River Valley area, Greenwood, Boonville, Salisaw, Poto, this whole region. And working together with the people in Northwest Arkansas is critical to the growth for all of us. I mean, when you consider that nationwide people are looking at mega groups, not just small regions, but mega regions, then certainly we become part of that. And it's very important, I think, that we all work together and do the best we can to try and help each other.
The strategy released by the Northwest Arkansas Council also calls for increasing the number of area residents with bachelor's degrees. The state of Arkansas still ranks 49th in that category, and reducing the number of high school dropouts. John Brown III will chair the Education Committee. After the meeting, he told reporters that the region and the state have been able to address issues comparable to dropout rates before.
In the early 90s, we had a task force on youth gangs and violence led by Attorney General Winston Bryant. And again, it was a problem in that era, and we had some community strategies and some state-level funding and ideas address the problem of kind of disaffected youth, those who are dropping out. Dropouts are a real problem. As I said, what's an acceptable number? There's not really an acceptable number. You want to treat every kid as an individual and help them reach their true potential.
After the 13 months of examination and identification of the region's strengths and weaknesses, the nearly 300-page strategy report is finished. Committee chairs have been assigned, goals established. Those may have been the easiest bits of the bigger process. Mike Malone, the president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, says next are some organizational steps and adding to the council staff.
We'll also start working on building out the job growth sectors. We announced 8 today. And a lot of building those out and making them successful is putting the right people who have the knowledge and expertise together, removing barriers to collaboration, and create opportunities for them to build on. And so we'll get to work on that right away as well. We won't do all 8 right away. We'll have to prioritize. But over the next couple years, I think we'll go a long way toward strengthening our collaboration in all 8 of those areas.
Many in attendance at the meeting yesterday have seen the rapid growth that's marked the area over the past 20 years. Speakers had familiar last names, Walton, Tyson, and Simmons included. Tommy DeWeese, a Fayetteville native and the chair of the Economic Development Committee set up by the council, has experienced that growth firsthand. He told the audience that it's been a fast ride over the past 2 decades, but the region, he thinks, is at another fork in the road.
And do we continue to do the operations and the things and the economic development in the way that we've done it in the past, or do we try to take a little bit of a step forward? And my suggestion is we take a little bit of a step forward.
Governor Mike Beebe and U.S. Senator Mark Pryor provided the bookends for the meeting yesterday. The governor offered words of advice he's delivered before in Northwest Arkansas. Be proud of what's been accomplished, but don't get complacent. And the president of the Northwest Arkansas Council advised that the region is in a competition, not just with cities within a day's drive, but with places like Austin, Texas. Those other communities, he told the group, see job growth and the ability to attract educated, talented people to a specific area as a competition. He referred to a similar report created by another region.
Raleigh-Durham considers it a war. It's such a fierce competition that they're trying to do everything they can in building a strategy and building a community consensus so that they can compete as best as possible. So it is a competition, and so the work of putting together strategy is to make sure that we can build on our strengths and shore up our weaknesses to compete with the Raleigh-Durhams and the Gainesville-Floridas and the Austin-Texases and other great regions like that.
Mike Malone, the president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, speaking yesterday in Springdale at the Tyson headquarters during the release of a report on strategies to guide the region's growth over the next decade. More about the report, strategies, and conclusions from the report can be seen at the website GreaterNorthwestArkansas.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Spring Springdale is eyeing the future as well. Continued revitalization of downtown Springdale's Eastern District is taking a big step forward with the development of a place known as Shiloh Square. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Just west of the railroad tracks on East Emma Avenue between Mill and Spring Streets in downtown Springdale is a large covered pavilion called Shiloh Square. The depressed facility is locked and gated now due to chronic vandalism, but city workers have been restoring it back to life. Springdale City Planner Patsy Christie.
And you'll see that we've poured concrete. We had some differential settling between the box culvert and the sides to it. We've taken the front cover off the first bay to kind of open it up. We've got some painting done. We've done a lot of cleanup.
Patsy Christie is a Springdale native and has served as Director of Planning and Community Development for Springdale since 1996.
Emma Avenue used to be a state highway coming through town. So we went through a process of trading that out and it became a city street. Once it became a city street, we have a little bit better control over it. And then we went through the process of developing Huntsville Avenue to the north of it to help move the traffic off of that. It's only been open about less than a year, or pretty close to a year by now. And I think we can see a major difference of the traffic and everything that used to be going down Emma. So it's changing its whole character now. We did receive some enhancement grants and we had to start, you know, in the center and go both directions. A lot of it was the amount of money we received. If you go to the east side of the railroad track, there's a couple of areas where we did some improvements. We had to look at areas where we had the right-of-way, where utilities weren't a major issue to have to be relocated, and so we had to be very careful because we had a very limited amount of the money. We have a streetscape for the whole thing that's several years old. There just hasn't been any more enhancement money for the last several many years. So that kind of put us on hold. So that's kind of where we are with MS3.
But after City Council approved $50,000 in seed money to open Shiloh Square, a domino effect has taken place.
Well, Shiloh Square is a pavilion that was built back when the Urban Renewal Project was done shortly after that. There was a lot of flooding in downtown Springdale. We have a giant box culvert that comes through the middle of town, and Shiloh Square was built on top of that. Years ago, it was used for farmers market and certain events. It got to be a problem with vandalism, and there were some bars and stuff put on it to kind of close it off because we were having some vandalism problems. In recent months, we've looked at developing a regional trail system, and the regional trail system is designed to come through Shiloh Square as the center of the regional trail system, which kind of helped us start talking about revitalizing Shiloh Square. In that process, we've looked at the possibility of creating an entire block around Shiloh Square, changing the direction of the traffic so that it's a one-way block around that to create a square in downtown. The council considered the possibility of purchasing some of the buildings that's adjacent to Shiloh Square at the last council meeting, and it was tabled to give us a little bit more time to determine what all we can use for those buildings for and what space it frees up and other departments can move into it.
The now empty several-story buildings along Spring Street that Christie's referring to were reportedly appraised at $445,000. The city's made an offer for $65,000 less than that. Once renovated, both municipal and law enforcement divisions would be able to expand into them. Plus, Northwest Arkansas Regional Planning Commission scored a $15 million grant in federal recovery money to construct a recreational trail through Washington and Benton counties. And Shiloh Square would benefit from some of that funding because it will serve as a trail hub.
That puts the city of Springdale in a very good position. As soon as we have the okay from Washington to move forward with that, we'll get into design and start having, you know, real development. We don't have a lot of trails built in Springdale. There's some around Lake Springdale. We've made some connections to Lake Springdale to J.B. Hunt Park. The school system in Springdale has applied for the tobacco money to build schools, trails on each of the schools. We've developed a master trail plan that connects all those to the city's trail system. Our idea is to get kids used to using trails at school. Then they just automatically move into more expanded trail system and walk places like we used to. And so that aspect of it's working really well. And it's a great partnership. You know, our public works director and our parks director is working with the schools, and they provide some of the labor and some of the materials. And it's just a great partnership to expand our trail system to the school system as well.
Springdale's share of the Trails Federal Recovery Grant is $9.8 million.
So we're kind of in the heart of the system, and we're the system that connects Rogers and Lowell to Fayetteville, and so you got to come through Springdale and through Shiloh Square, and that's the heart of the regional trail system.
Patsy Christie and her planning staff have been promoting the project with a prepared PowerPoint presentation, including large, colorful placards. The finished square will be the jewel of downtown Springdale.
And here you can see a picture of where we take the front bay off and create kind of a pergola effect with picnic tables and stuff as an area for people to be able to come and sit. And it has an old stage in it. We took the old Apollo Theater theme that's downtown Springdale and moved that in. It'll have a screen that drops down so that we can do weekend movies, that kind of stuff in that, all kinds of activities. We're putting light cubes around each of the, these are the columns that hold up the roof. There'll be light cubes that have the ability to take that artwork off of there. If you're having a family reunion, you could have pictures of your family there. They're all LED lighting. We're looking to use our energy grant that we received to do LED lighting and wind and solar power for Shiloh Square itself so that it becomes self-sufficient and it's not a maintenance expense. There is a concession stand in there. We've used a railroad theme and it kind of looks like a depot that'll have a patio area around it with more tables. But this area where you see where all the trees are is where the farmer's market could also go. We can get about 25, 30 different vendors giving them space inside there to operate. This is the back side of it. It has an alley now. We'll be closing that alley down and making it all pedestrian friendly. There, you can see another picture of that's the train depot itself. We've kind of picked the theme of an old picture of the city of Springdale and Emma Avenue when it was bustling with all kinds of activity going on is kind of our theme, and that's going to be what Shiloh Square's theme is. We will be putting a trailhead at the northern edge of that with a water feature, a rain garden. We've already had commitments from Cargill and the Illinois River Watershed Partnership to help us do that rain garden. It'll have a water feature there. We have a lot of kids that come to Shiloh Museum on a regular basis just down the street. We're looking at creating an environmental education facility here so the kids can come down and see a rain garden and how it works. And then when we do solar and wind power for Shiloh Square, there'll be an education opportunity there to see how much energy can be saved when you use wind and solar power. So tying those two things together because they're so close to the downtown area. We've also looked at creating on the other side of Emma Avenue, north of Shiloh Square, a fountain facility. One of our dreams has always been to have the appearance of Spring Creek being back down into Springdale. I mean, we put Spring Creek in a box and it kind of got lost. So this creates the illusion of a creek, and it will have areas to seat walls to sit, places where it looks like springs. It'll end in an area down across the street from Shiloh Square, which will be like a splash pad or a cool down area for bikers and that kind of places. It'll have places to sit. The bike trail will go through it. It just creates a whole new image and a whole new gathering place for the city of Springdale and downtown on M Avenue.
Shiloh Square will host its first farmers market this coming April. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And organizers of that downtown farmers market in Springdale in April will probably not have to be concerned with snow, ice, or cancellations because of cold weather. However, events scheduled for the next 2 days now carry that weather permitting tag. But should we escape ice, sleet, and snow, the City of Fayetteville Tree and Landscape Advisory Committee will present a talk by Cindy Cope tomorrow night at 6:30. It will be held in the Walker Community Room of the Fayetteville Public Library. Cope will present Ozark Native Landscape, Why Biodiversity is Important. Her talk will be illustrated with examples from local landscapes. It's free and open to the public. The Ozark Highlanders Bagpipe Band is scheduled to celebrate its 28th annual Robert Burns Night Dinner Saturday night at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville. The evening, celebrating Scottish culture, includes dinner, a performance by the Bagpipe Band, other Celtic music, and a remembrance of the poet Robert Burns. Tickets, reservations, and more at 444-0746. And then early next week, surely we'll be past any snow advisories by then. An Evening with Bass Reeves will be held Tuesday night from 5 until 7 at the Fort Smith Public Library. You can enjoy a public reading of the award-winning book, Bad News for Outlaws, The Remarkable Life of Bass Reeves, Deputy U.S. Marshal. That event free and open to the public. For more information, 783-0229. To find out about these and other events throughout the KUAF listening area, you can go to our website, KUAF.com. And ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, what is history? What you remember, what somebody else remembers, or what historians try to construct years, decades, or even centuries later. Our history doctor considers the past, history with a small h, and history with a capital H ahead. Our latest We're History is coming up in the very near future on Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, January 19th, 2011. Most area colleges and universities are back in session now, so since it's the start of the semester, our history doctor Bill Smith has come by to talk about, well, what is history?
Well, this is that time of year when I typically open up the semester with my admonition to students about the flexibility of history, that we often write our histories to serve our own visions of the past.
Sounds a bit odd. Isn't this whole thing that we do usually going after people in the media who forget the facts of the past so that they can say that something that happened today is extraordinary?
Well, yes, we've spent a lot of episodes here talking about presentism.
Yes.
And I'm not going to say that our history is so incredibly flexible that we can literally make it what we want, but by a little selective memory or the segregation of this fact or that fact to the side, we can certainly make it more reflective of our time period than you might want to believe. It's one of the things that helps us think we live in those unique times. I like to drum out this old Karl Marx quote that he said, "He who controls the past controls the future." If you're concerned that today we live in a world that is consumed by an overly contentious political climate, you're inclined to overlook that we've had some genuinely violent periods in the past of our American history. And that helps make today look somewhat tame when you overlook the past.
I get the feeling we're about to step into something that might be the philosophy of history. So let me start with this again, big question. What is history?
Well, I like to tell the students that there's three kinds of history, and this is my own little flavor of that philosophy.
Okay.
There's the past, there's history with a little h, and then there's history with a capital H. The past is what happened. You lived it. You have your own memories and myths of what you experienced from your own little corner of what has happened in the world. No one person can ever have the complete understanding of the past because no one single individual could possibly have seen the event from all the potential angles.
But the past is what you had.
The past is what happened.
Gotcha.
Whether you were there or not,
okay.
It's like the tree falling in the woods.
Right.
The past happened. History is what got recorded.
Okay.
Often, what was recorded by, as we would say today, the media, or in original documents like transcripts of meetings or proceedings, photographs and today videotape, real-time reporting of things that unfolded of historic events. It's one reason why we're so harsh at times on our first editions of history taken down by the journalists who were at the scene. The little h, then, of history is what we recorded years gone by, sometimes decades later, when we go back and try to create our interpretation of those past events in a global sense that leads us to capital H history.
With more time to reflect and try to create a past narrative, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay, so if you're bringing this up, I know you have to have some examples for us.
Well, actually today, I don't have a single example. But I'm going to ask the listeners to give this exercise some thought.
All right.
Think back to when you were, say, around 20. And what was the pressing political event of that day? Now, you know, for me, I'm just going to go ahead and date myself. You know, Reagan's president. And he was giving the heave-ho to the air traffic controllers.
82, 83.
Exactly. So I have a memory of that. I remember how bitter and contentious it was in the media, and there were threats of certain death from aircraft falling from the skies and the sheer confusion that would result. And you know, it didn't end up that way, obviously. As I read back then on books of the period written by historians with their capital H now, their view of it going back, Reagan's showdown with Patco somehow impacted the Soviets to believe he was a hardliner.
Which could have affected things that came after it.
And again, not exactly the way I remember it at the time that Ronald Reagan was dealing with a labor issue. I didn't see this interpretation that got brought back onto the facts of the past by the capital H history of a historian looking back on it. I just saw Ronald Reagan dealing with a domestic issue. It took someone else to decide to make it part of the whole cold warrior ethos of Ronald Reagan.
Are you suggesting then, suggesting for us that we need to be careful when people writing the big H history begin to come to conclusions?
Exactly. We think the same thing of our political writers today. We think about our editorialists the same way. We think about our media this way. Maybe we need to be just a little skeptical at times of our history. Not because we want to be deniers or conspiracy theorists, but just to say that everything does have a point of view. And the more open we are to knowing that even in things like history, there can occasionally be points of view, the more things we might just find out about our past. Daniel Patrick Moynihan is famously recorded as having said of political debate, "We're entitled to our own opinions, but not to our own facts." And the same can certainly be said of history.
Okay, I've mentioned it before. So we're kind of having a philosophical discussion about history. And if no one can ever actually know everything about history, whether you were there, you didn't see it from every angle, you didn't have every bit of information, you don't know all the minutiae. So is there anything we can be absolutely certain of?
Well, there are things of the past that certainly we can come together on. I think we can agree that on December 7th, 1941, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. That on June the 6th, 1944, we crossed the English Channel to begin the D-Day invasion. That, you know, on July 21st, 1969, man walked on the moon. Well, okay, at least 90% of us can agree on that.
Okay, we're not going to go that. Now we're getting back to creating our own facts, aren't we?
And until next time, then,
we're history. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 18th, 2011. Dozens of Tea Party members made their presence felt at the state capitol in Little Rock yesterday with a rally in the rotunda. The point, leaders said, was to support legislators, but also let them know that citizens will be watching their actions during this legislative session. David Crow, chair of the Faulkner County Tea Party, says he wants a change from the status quo.
One thing I was taken back by last week was in one of the committees I attended, there must have been 50 individuals in there that was made up of government employees and lobbyists. There were two citizens that weren't connected with it, and I walked outside, there had to be 100 lobbyists standing outside. So what I found out was there was so few of the citizens that need to be engaged and weren't.
Tea Party members applauded the votes by two House committees who did vote to allow live webcasting of their meetings. Barbara Dalby was there. She, too, a member of the Tea Party. She says she came to wish lawmakers luck and let them know they'd be scrutinized this year.
We're going to be monitoring the bills, seeing if they meet up to our philosophies in the Tea Party, which is basically about spending. And if a bill exceeds what we think is appropriate for spending, then we're going to get our group together and we're going to be contacting these legislators.
Many of those in attendance in support of the Tea Party say they believe there is fat yet to be cut out of Governor Beebe's proposed balanced budget. Meanwhile, state lawmakers are getting a first look at the tough issues they'll face when they redraw the lines of congressional and legislative districts. The legislature has to redistrict the state using census information that's scheduled to be released next month. A.J. Kelly, with the Secretary of State's office, says it might not be impossible to draw new congressional lines along county lines, but it would be very difficult.
Based on my understanding of what the math is, I think, and my understanding of what the preliminary numbers are, more than anything else, the math just doesn't work this time.
Arkansas is currently one of just three states that divide congressional districts without splitting counties. But this could be the year that individual counties are split between congressional districts as new lines are drawn. Kelly says it's getting easier to make sure each congressman in the state represents the same number of people.
On the one hand, I think that the update of the computer software will make it easier and you'll be able to have better mathematical precision. On the other hand, because it's easier and there's more mathematical precision, it makes drawing the lines and moving them all the more painful to the person who's on the wrong side of whichever line it is.
And also from Little Rock, officials at Arkansas Children's Hospital are making budget cuts to stop a revenue shortfall after lower than expected numbers of overnight patients. Dr. Jonathan Bates is president and CEO of the hospital. He says changes in pay practices are necessary.
We are going to change the possibility for an annual increase from 4% down to 2%. We're also changing the way in which we have in the past been able to add some extra money to the retirement plan above and beyond the normal amount, and it looks like this year we won't be able to do that.
Dr. Bates says some part-time employees will no longer receive full-time benefits, and there will be reductions, particularly for nurses that work in a special program on weekends. However, he says he does not foresee any layoffs.
Still mulling over the repercussions of the 2010 midterms? Real political junkies are looking at 2012, especially after two long-serving senators declared they won't run again. Texas Republican Kay Bailey Hutchison and North Dakota Democrat Kent Conrad. I'm Neil Conan, political junkie Ken Rudin on the 2012 Senate races. Plus, how do you pronounce Reince Priebus? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 1 until 3, right after this edition of Ozarks at Large.
Singer, songwriter, and actress Dolly Parton was born on this date in 1946 in Locust Ridge, Tennessee. By the age of 11, she was singing on a local radio station, and after graduating from high school, she moved to Nashville to pursue a music career. Parton launched her solo career in 1967, and though she partnered with Porter Wagoner for his television show from 1967 to 1975, she remained primarily a solo act. It was for him that Parton dedicated the ever-popular I Will Always Love You. She won the Country Music Award for Female Vocalist in 1975 and 1976. In 1987, she recorded Trio. In 93, she put out another collaboration, this time with Loretta Lynn and Tammy Wynette, titled Honky Tonk Angels. In 99, she returned to acoustics with The Grass is Blue, which won a Grammy for Best Bluegrass Album. Parton was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2000. In addition to music, Parton also became interested in acting, starring in 1980's 9 to 5, 1982's Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, and 1989's Steel Magnolias. She also opened the Dollywood theme park in 1985, which continues to be one of the South's most popular vacation destinations. In 2006, Dolly Parton received special recognition for her lifetime contributions to the arts. She was one of five artists honored at the annual Kennedy Center Honors. Her most recent release was Backwoods Barbie in 2008, which featured two country hits, Better Get to Livin' and Jesus and Gravity.
But above all this, I wish you love. I love you. I will always love you. I will always, always love you.
On this date in 1922, the Sheridan Headlight announced the organization of the Ku Klux Klan in Grant County, Arkansas, noting that the members and meetings were unknown. In March of 1922, the KKK demonstrated with a parade through the streets of Sheridan that drew one of the largest crowds of its time. However, in the late 1920s, the Klan declined rapidly in popularity in the state. Few black families lived in Sheridan until the 1920s, when those numbers increased due primarily to the arrival of forest industries that employed black workers. On this date in 1937, millionaire Howard Hughes set a transcontinental air record by flying his monoplane from Los Angeles to Newark, New Jersey in 7 hours, 28 minutes, and 25 seconds. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's Wednesday, the 19th day of January 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
I want to send you to one thing tonight and then talk about some things tomorrow night.
All right, first tonight.
Because tomorrow is this weird, you know, our society writer Karen Schottmeyer says Thursday is the new Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's right.
Okay. So what's tonight?
Wednesday, the Singer-Songwriter Circle is tonight at 7 at Arcega's on Crossover in Fayetteville. Great way if you're interested in making music to go meet some people who are. Now, coming Thursday, it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day in Fort Smith.
Yes.
With Eddie Armstrong III speaking about the spirit of community, combining leadership theory and practice with community service learning. He's a lot more interesting than that title sounded. He's Chief Executive Officer of Armstrong and Davis Consulting in North Little Rock and founder of the Eddie Armstrong Scholarship Foundation, which provides scholarships to minority students from single-parent families.
And if you want a preview of what he might be talking about, he was interviewed Monday on Ozarks at Large. You can find that on our Monday page at ozarksatlarge.com.
And he will be speaking at 10 o'clock Thursday in the Reynolds Room of the Smith Pendergraft Campus Center at the University of Arkansas in Fort Smith. It's free. Trout Fishing in America is tomorrow night at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Show starts at 7:30. Tickets are $10 to $20, 632-2129. Robert Randolph and the Family Band, 9 o'clock tomorrow night at George's in Fayetteville. Tickets are $20 if any still exist.
That's right. That it?
No, one more.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Country music musician Tracy Lawrence.
That's right.
Also tomorrow night, 10 o'clock at the Cherokee Casino in West Siloam Springs, and his show is free.
You have been warned. Thursday's a busy day and busy night. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Theater Squared's next production, Sundown Town, examines race relations in a fictional Arkansas town in the first part of the last century. The script was developed over the past few years by playwright Kevin Cohey at theater festivals held here in Northwest Arkansas. It is an ambitious work with a large cast and live bluegrass provided by Three Penny Acre on stage. Last night at the Fayetteville Public Library, there was a panel discussion about the script and the history of sundown towns, communities where people of color were not welcome at certain places or at certain times. As we get closer to the opening of Sundown Town in early February, we'll hear significant portions of last night's conversation. On this edition of Ozarks, just a bit from the panel that I was invited to moderate last night. Kevin Cohey told a near-capacity audience at the discussion how he developed the play.
Originally, it was written for the Arkansas New Play Festival that Theater Squared did in 2009. And I was approached by David Pickens at Theater Squared about doing a bluegrass musical. And I said, well, that's cool. You know, we haven't heard of very many of those before. So I started doing the research. So the initial idea was that I would focus on the music and then find the story that would go along with the music. So I actually found the music for the show prior to writing the script. So I was digging through a lot of music and found songs that I thought fit together as a story, and then I tried to figure out the story that I would put with it. There's this weird echo thing going on. And really, what I did was I used an Encyclopedia of Arkansas for quite a bit of research, and I was researching different things from different time periods, and I came across this idea of sundown towns in Arkansas, and one of the images that I found was an ad circa 1913 or so for Siloam Springs, that was an advertisement. You know, come visit our beautiful city, healing waters and clear skies and city-owned parks. No mosquito, no malarias, no Negroes. I was like, wow. So what really cinched it for me was that image in the middle of that print ad was the building where the high school that I teach at does its graduation ceremony. So that really connected it for me, and that's where I said, okay, I'm going to tell that story.
The first two offerings from Theater Squared this season have been comedies, and they've been wildly successful at the box office. But Sundown Town is a play that approaches a tough and touchy subject, race relations. Theater Squared's artistic director, Bob Ford, was also part of the panel last night, and he explained why the company decided to give this script its world premiere.
Well, we had a great play.
That was the decision process. We were looking for material for this, our first Arkansas New Play Festival a couple years back, and David Pickens had this idea that we should be capitalizing on the music of Arkansas. We got a grant, generous grant from the state to do this, and the stipulation was plays that had something to do with Arkansas. And we love Kevin's work, and we approached him to write something about, you know, that included music. And he came back with this amazing juxtaposition of this real, you know, ugly mark on our history, and not just Arkansas's, juxtaposed with pretty upbeat music and a lot of church music and church people. And right away, it was that irony from a dramatic perspective and a, you know, theatrical perspective was dynamite. So basically, we saw that play, the reading of that play that year, and we never looked back. And we knew, I think we, in the theater company, right, Morgan? I mean, we knew we were going to do this play. And we brought it back last year to do some more work on it in the festival. And yeah, the rest is history. But that basically, we had a great play on our hands. It is so much what we are about or what we want to be about as a theater company. It is so on our sweet spot that's just kind of a side benefit. It feels really good to be putting on this play.
When we are closer to the February 4th opening date, we'll hear much more from last night's conversation recorded at the Fayetteville Public Library. For more about the play, Sundown Town, you can go to theater2.org. That's theater, the number 2.org. Music from Charlie Hayden on Ozarks at Large. And this reminder, if you hear any piece of music during these programs that you'd like to know more about, we keep a complete list of all the music we use on our Ozarks at Large daily rundowns, and you can find that information at ozarksatlarge.com. You're listening to KUAF 91.3 FM. If you or your business would like more information on how to become a program sponsor on KUAF, you can visit KUAF.com and click on Support KUAF at the top of the screen. And while you're at our website, you can also learn more about the brand new, absolutely free KUAF iPhone app. With that app, you can listen to KUAF 91.3 FM anywhere in the world on your iPhone, plus KUAF HD2, our 24/7 classical music station, and KUAF 3, that features news talk programming, many of the programs that you can't hear on KUAF 91.3 FM. Other features include an alarm clock that lets you go to sleep to one KUAF signal and wake up to another, plus on-demand Ozarks at Large programs from the past couple of weeks. It's all available for free. All you have to do is go to the iPhone App Store and search KUAF. And again, for more information on the KUAF iPhone app, that's available at KUAF.com.
On the next Fresh Air, surgeon and journalist Atul Gawande. His article suggesting higher spending on health care doesn't lead to better outcomes caught President Obama's eye a year and a half ago. His latest piece in The New Yorker looks at efforts to drive down costs by providing better care to chronically ill patients. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, tonight, beginning at 6, after All Things Considered, on KUAF 91.3 FM. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the Arkansas Community Foundation and its 27 community-based affiliate offices, providing in-depth understanding of local needs, while its central office maintains a statewide perspective on Arkansas's challenges and opportunities. Philanthropic gifts can change lives. Arkansas Community Foundation. For good, for Arkansas, forever. 372-1116 or arcf.org for more information. And by Walton Arts Center, presenting violinist Joshua Bell on January 28th. Joshua Bell, along with pianist Sam Haywood, will perform an evening of classical works, including Brahms, Schubert, and Grieg. Tickets and more information at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Bentonville, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at our website, KUAF.com. Here are three words that the National Weather Service issued just before 11 o'clock this morning. Winter storm warning. A winter storm warning is in effect from 6 this evening until 6 p.m. Thursday night, according to the National Weather Service. The counties in our listening area that are affected by this storm warning in Oklahoma, Adair, Delaware, and Ottawa, in Arkansas, Washington, Madison, Benton, and Carroll. The National Weather Service suggests a wintry mix of precipitation is expected to move into extreme northeast Oklahoma and northwest Arkansas this evening and then continue through late tomorrow afternoon. Precipitation may start as a mix of rain, freezing rain, and sleet before it turns quickly to all snow. Heaviest snow expected to be late tonight and tomorrow morning. From 3 to 6 inches of snow accumulation and less than a tenth of an inch of ice accumulation expected from 6 tonight until 6 tomorrow night. So roads, bridges, overpasses in the warning area could likely become very slick and hazardous. That's the latest from the National Weather Service. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF 91.3 FM. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for tuning in. And I'll be back tomorrow at noon with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. You can learn more about our program and listen to older programs or individual stories at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. Have a great Wednesday.